guys, I'm Heather, and I'm the oldest. She's the emotional one.
Gonna hurt. Do not
like
puke
I don't
on
know
my carpet.
To try to get it to come out here or here.
Jesus, Mary, Joseph, and all of his carpenter friends.
Hey guys, I'm Ben. I'm the middle child.
And he's the practical one.
Okay. Oh, what am I gonna say though?
Now y'all made me nervous.
It's gonna be a time.
I'm a sensitive boy.
I'm Beth, and I'm the baby.
She's also the swing vote.
I've been hit.
I got the little frilly socks and everything.
Together, we make the Music List Podcast. And welcome back to the Music List Podcast. My name is Ben. With me are my sisters, Beth and Heather. And we are siblings that argue while making music lists. That's the shtick. That's what we do. In our last episode, which was hot off the presses. Did it again. Another one more idiom.
Good job.
We promised you that we would be talking about the best. What's the correct term? What's the politically correct term?
Wing person.
It's typically called the best wingman in front, but I mean, you know, it's theoretically that you could choose a female for this spot. So wing person, but probably it, the graphic will almost certainly say best wingman. I'm just going to let you know. So we're not trying to be sexist. It's just wing person takes more space on me, and it doesn't sound as good. So anyway, if you're wondering what a wingman is in rock, generally speaking, not always, generally speaking, the front man is the lead singer. The most important person in the band, the most iconic person in the band is usually the lead singer. It's not always the case. Eddie Van Halen is one of the exceptions to the rule. I would say the band was named after the guitar player and technically the drummer, I guess, since he was a Van Halen also. But everyone knows Eddie Van Halen was the prodigy in that particular band. There are some bands, and if you pick one of these, I'm sorry, I guess, but I would say like Led Zeppelin doesn't apply. Because they are almost all equal in their greatness. They're almost all equal in how popular they are. In fact, I would say that guitarists probably look up to Jimmy Page as much or more as lead singers look up to Robert Plant. Drummers certainly look up to John Bonham, maybe even more so than they do Plant and Page. So... and then you look at the Beach Boys. I mean, how many? I mean, they're multiple lead singers. The Eagles have multiple lead singers. So, you know, there are a lot of bands that don't have a clear front man, or the front man may not be the lead singer in some cases. So, anyway, so as we kind of, I would imagine there's going to be a lot of guitar players on this list, but. These are people that are obviously very famous in their bands, but they don't necessarily have the same pedestal that the lead singer does. So that's kind of the way we're going to operate under that assumption. The draft order is Heather. Have you drafted first every time?
No, I haven't drafted first in a long time.
Well, no, the week before or weekends or whatever.
I haven't.
For the... Alan Jackson, once you drafted first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah, because it was a shame that you got to pick first. Yeah. But it ended up not mattering.
It was a good song, though.
It was a good song.
Yeah,
a month ago.
6 weeks
ago. So Heather drafts first. Beth drafts second. I draft third. And then in the second round, I do get to go first. Heather will draft last. And then in the third round, Heather will draft first, Beth second, me third. So that's the draft order. The way that's going to work is we're going to draft 9 wingmen, possibly women. That'll give us 9, obviously. And then we will cut 4 of those in the 9-5 round. Then we'll have 5, and we're going to then rank them. The best wingman, number 1. the fifth best five, and that will give us our top five wingmen, rock wingmen of all time. So the question then becomes, what were you looking for in what makes a great wingman? Heather, we'll start with you.
For me, it was somebody that they are not replaceable when it comes to their sound, what they contributed to the overall sound of the band. I'll try not to give any examples because I don't want to step on anybody's picks, but I have a few people in mind that even though they're not the lead singer, either because of their writing or because of their background vocals and, you know, supporting vocals, it put the stamp on what their sound is. So for me, the wingman is somebody who really contributes a large amount, if not an equal amount, to the singer as far as their sound goes.
Beth?
Yeah, I was kind of the same way. I was looking for somebody who was a clear second that you would think of in the band. And then not just, oh, they're the next face you think of or name that you think of, but what was their impact musically, in the performances or the visuals of the band? Like Heather said, there you can't just pluck them out and put any other person in that spot.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I agree with all that. There was also a sense of, for me, I wanted there to be, in one way or another, a sense of charisma about this person that, yes, this is the front man over here, right? Whether, you know, whoever the case, this is, and there are some iconically charismatic front men. I mean, that's, some of them, that's what they're known for. They're not even great singers. They're just incredibly charismatic, can draw a crowd. But then let's say it's a guitar player and it's their turn to do a solo, or maybe it's not even necessarily a solo, but they've got the beginning riff, the you know, that starts the song off, and they've got a signature stance, or they've got a sense of charisma about them that, when the focus is on them, it doesn't take away from the moment of the concert, the live performance. Or it could be somebody that has so much chemistry with the lead singer that oftentimes they will work together on the same mic, or, you know, the lead singer may feel comfortable enough to get right next to the guitar player, bass player, whatever, and, you know, kind of try to emphasize that person for them, almost like a partnership. I mean, when we think of a wingman, like when men think of this is my wingman, it's, let's say it's in the concept of trying to get girls, right? So the wingman is the person that helps you get the girls. That's the person you fall on to, you know, say the right things, or, you know, say something that's going to progress the relationship or whatever the case, your odds of being able to get that girl's number, whatever the case, right? So the wingman for me in rock and roll needs to be somebody that helps to elevate the band, and the front man take that audience to the next level. And so that's kind of what I was looking for. As much of the, and, you know, and then there is that behind the scenes. What do they do, you know, in the songwriting? What do they do musically? What do they do as part of the concept of the whole to increase the value of the band? So I think we're all pretty much on the same page with that, but it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of, where we weight certain things on our list. So Heather, you get the first pick. So who in your opinion should be number one overall best wingman rock and roll?
In my opinion, this wingman is almost as iconic to the brand as the singer, and it's Slash.
Yeah.
aesthetic goes, he may be more instantly recognizable with the top hat and everything as Axel. What I think makes him a standout is that his solos and his lead work is so crucial to the Guns N' Roses sound. They're lyrical, they're melodic, they're another voice almost. Those solos, it's almost like another verse or where that solo gets in telling the story. He and Axel at one time were very, very close. They would describe themselves as like brothers. And his departure really changed the magic and the momentum and the entire sound of the group. He ultimately left because Axel made him feel like a hired hand. Axel did a cover. It may have been Knocking on Heaven's Door, but he hired somebody else, and Slash was like, oh, we don't do it. And so he left. They reconciled in 2016. We were lucky enough to see them when they went back out. And it's very hard to, obviously, they did replace him. I think Guns has had like 23 members go through there at some time or another, but you really don't have Guns N' Roses without Slash. Obviously, you can't really do it without Axel because that voice is so distinct, but it's kind of like trying to have Skid Row without Sebastian Bach.
You know? Irony is you can't have it without Gunn.
Well, yes, you can. You have
you know, that's the irony of it all.
Yeah. But when I think of a wingman Slash, you know, really elevates the band. He is supportive to Axel in that his solos kind of reinforce Axel's voice and, mm-hmm. and storytelling. So that's my pick.
And
100 million records later.
And charismatic in a very subtle way. You know, I mean, like he's not, you know, he's not, when he plays, he's not going to make all these crazy guitar faces mm-mm. and these crazy poses.
But he definitely hits a stance. There's an iconic, you know, the way he.
He is super chill, mm-hmm. super cool.
Very smart.
And knows his look very well. Has tailored his look mm-hmm. About as well as any guitarist ever. I mean,
and what a brilliant thing to be forward thinking. And I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if you meant to, but you know, like the hair covers the face and then so you can age mm-hmm. and age and age and age.
Yeah.
And you know, you're going to be able to look pretty consistent for years and years, you know, and the thing about Slash is he has fronted many bands, you know, he has put together many groups, but I think where he really was just in his element was with that partnership with Axel, because Axel's such a loose cannon and just so out there. And, you know, Slash anchored. He was the cool factor. Mm-hmm. You know, Axel was the dynamite and he was just the ice, you know, and it was a good partnership. Good to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to be a contender for sure for a top five and later on. I mean, he's because if you ask most people, here's the other thing. If you ask most people, what members can you name from Guns N' Roses? Those are going to be the two.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, most people are not going to be able to do what?
Maybe Duff.
Yeah, but most people certainly won't. But I would say even people like that don't listen to a lot of hard rock, like our mom, I bet she can name Slash. I bet she could point him out of a lineup.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's definitely part of the package. So I pick next. Is that true? No. Gosh, why do I always pick last? I don't like it.
You could rig it.
You set the draft.
I could rig it, but I don't. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, you pick, I guess. Go ahead.
All right. My first draft pick is, I'm going to veer away from the expectations already.
Okay.
It's not a guitar player. Well, it is a kind of guitar. It's a bass player. Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers. Top of Rolling Stone's 100 Greatest Bassists of All Time. He has jazz roots. He studied trumpet before bass and attended USC's music program for theory. He's also got a little bit of an acting career. A few movies.
Did you see him on Hot Ones?
Yes, that was a really interesting episode. he's collaborated with artists like Tom Waits, Alanis Morissette, Johnny Cash, Tom York. And for Red Hot Chili Peppers, he's very important to the sound. That is a very bass-driven band, really a rock, funk, fusion. Mm-hmm. And that sets them apart from other bands that, well, really any other band, not now or when they were releasing music. They have a unique sound, and that's majorly due to his techniques and his ability, his skill. He's got that slapping and popping that he does. It's inspired by other funk artists. It had an evolving sound, but he's versatile. They've got elements of punk, jazz, psychedelic rock, alt rock and funk. And that band, they still have, they're one of those bands that they have an identity sonically, but they do shift and evolve from album to album. But it's not like they make major changes to their sound. It's just an evolution. He's a major songwriting contributor. Anthony Kiedis writes most of the lyrics, but Flea is central in composing a lot of the riffs and melodies. So, and in most bands, the bass player is kind of like hidden, you know, like it's about the lead vocal, the lead guitar, even sometimes the drummer, like if you think about somebody like Tommy Lee or something, a very flashy drummer. But Flea redefined what it could look like to be a bass player, and they could be front and center as much of a showman, sometimes if not more energetic than the front man in this band. And so he's got energy, he's got skill, this really expressive type of playing and performing. And he's just critical in making Red Hot Chili Peppers one of the most recognizable and enduring rock bands of the last 40 years. Flea.
And some of his bass lines are
crazy.
Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Insane. Yeah. Unbelievable. I mean, he's really, sometimes it's hard for bass players to be, I guess, creative is the right word. I mean, they just kind of stick to the, you know, hitting the bottom part of the chord.
Yeah, because I mean, your job as a bass player is usually to, you're synced up with the drummer and you guys are holding it down.
But some of his runs are just, I mean, just really, really impressive. And I'm a big Red Hot Chili Peppers fan. So, is it finally my turn?
It's finally your turn.
Okay.
Make it good.
Well, we've had two good ones already, right? So, to me, this was my number one, to be fair. The quintessential wingman in the history of rock and roll, to me, is Keith Richards. Very different than most other wingman guitarists. Most other wingman guitarists are the clear number two because they are doing these insane solos. They're doing these, going off the bananas rails stuff. Where Keith is very different. Number one, he's a rhythm guitar player. I mean, that's really, he's maybe the greatest rhythm guitar player of all time. But he focuses on riffs, and he focuses on intros, and he focuses on, keeping things in order. And so while he will rarely take the attention away from Mick Jagger in that sense, and another thing that he does is the open G tuning doesn't really, maybe that's why it doesn't really avail itself to the crazy solos that you have, because you have limited notes to play. But the other thing that it does, and this is, it makes the Rolling Stones sound like nobody else. You know, when you're one of the very few guys that are doing this open G tuning, your band is going to have a different sound than everybody else. And so, his contribution to the Rolling Stones is nobody's going to sound like us because nobody else is doing, or they're not nobody, but there are very few people doing open G tuning. You know, it's not the typical ADGBD, whatever tuning. So that makes it significant. It makes the band sound significantly different. And then it allows them to really drive those riffs over and over again. And so when you think of like that beginning riff with I Can't Get No Satisfaction, we see it with Sympathy with the Devil, Give Me Shelter. They're very recognizable, but we're not going to see these crazy guitar solos from Keith Richards. But what we do have from Keith Richards is this look, this calm, this cool. I mean, he's one of the coolest guys in the history of rock and roll, right? Yeah. Like, you can't get him flustered. You know, I've seen people try to get him flustered, and he's got a really – he has the quickest wit for somebody who talks so slowly. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, really does. I mean,
unbothered.
And just – you know, and we keep, you know, the joke is, what kind of world are we going to leave for Keith Richards when we die, right? And so, you know, he is without a doubt the number two in the Rolling Stones. There's no question about it. And, well, who are the Rolling Stones? They're arguably, outside of the Beatles, the greatest rock and roll band of all time. That's an argument that can easily be made and defended. Yep. And so when you are the clear wingman in the number two greatest rock and roll band of all time, there's something to be said for that. And the Rolling Stones as a band, and largely because of Keith Richards and Mick Jagger's ability to evolve with the times and their ability to, number one, get along for so long and write together for so long. He has given, he's in the Songwriting Hall of Fame because most of their songs are co-written Jagger Richards. We're talking 60 years of music together. They were founded in 62. This is now 2025. That's 23 years. They've almost, 63 years. And they still look like they're in good shape.
Yeah.
They could play music together longer than most people are alive.
Mm-hmm.
I could see them still being alive 7 years from now and playing and being a 70th anniversary
crazy
album
yeah.
of the Rolling Stones. And still have the drawing power. I remember when they and the Eagles were touring at about the same time during the Hell Freezes Over tour. That would have been, 94?
Four.
Okay. And they were drawing massive crowds. They were selling out
yep.
everywhere 30 years after their original album. It's insane. And a lot of that is Keith Richards and his ability to evolve. So 200 million albums they've sold. Just crazy. And I think he is quite possibly the coolest guy ever in rock and roll. I mean, like cool. Stevie Ray Vaughan's really cool, you know, just super cool, super chill. But I think just on the chill fact, and Slash is kind of the same way. But I think Keith Richards is just so, and those fingers, like you can see when you look at his fingers on a fretboard, it's you instantly know that's Keith, not Keith. Keith, K E E F, Keith. So that's my pick, Keith Richards. I get to go again. Yes.
Yeah.
This one I understand if there's going to be some pushback. Because you could argue that this is actually the front man of the band. What would you say, Sean? You know who this is coming.
I bet I know who it is.
We had the same discussion.
But dude is good. And yeah. it's Angus Young from yeah. AC/DC. Totally satisfied. Angus Young, obviously, and so now I'm kind of rethinking this choice, I'll be honest with you, just because, like, so many more people will probably recognize, and he is the face of the band. I mean, when people think of AC/DC, they think of him duck walking yeah. across the stage with those shorts and those white socks, you know, I mean, that's what they see, with no shirt on, and they don't think of Brian Johnson or Bon Scott. The picture, when you picture AC/DC, the picture in your mind is actually Angus Young playing the guitar. So I fully understand if he's not in the top five, because you could make the argument that he, while not the lead singer, is the front man of the band. But what a great fusion of hard rock, metal, blues. The driving riffs, can he do that? 100%. How is he on solos? He's amazing. I think a lot of times AC/DC gets crapped on a little bit as being simplistic. But Angus Young is, if you put him on a top 10 all-time guitarist list, I wouldn't balk at that at all. This guy can do it all. Fantastic. And to be able to do it that high energy for an entire concert, because that guy doesn't stop. I mean, he is always in motion. He is also one of the key co-writers of AC/DC. He gets a co-writing credit on just about every AC/DC song. In fact, this is one of the few instances where the lead singer doesn't write much of the songs. Most of the songs are written by, would be better, Angus and Malcolm. And that includes, I mean, think about some of these iconic rock riffs. Back in Black, which we just heard, Highway to Hell, Thunderstruck. I mean, it's just an incredible, incredible array for him. So I understand if he doesn't make it. Now looking back, because he is the most charismatic person in that band. He is the picture that people think. In fact, on a lot of their live album, it's Angus Young on the cover of the live album and nobody else. It's nobody else. It's just Angus duck walking with his guitar. So I understand completely, but nonetheless, we did get to listen to AC/DC today. So that makes today a good day.
All right. Well, I am going to draft the person I immediately thought of when we talked about this category.
I feel like I know who it is.
You probably do, because I love him. It's Joe Perry.
Yep.
Rolling Stone's 100 Greatest Guitarists of All Time. He's in the Songwriters Hall of Fame with Steven Tyler. He won the Founders Award for Songwriting Excellence from the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. He's also a foodie. He released a line of hot sauces called Joe Perry's Rock Your World. And he's also an author. But he's been at it for over 60 years. He just has this gritty blues-based sound, but also has this arena rock swag, hard rock. I mean, Aerosmith is a very versatile band. We've talked about them before and all the different styles and sounds that they have had over the years. And he's a huge part of that. So when Aerosmith, he brought that raw blues influenced tone to their sound, and his riffs are the backbone to a lot of their greatest hits. You'll hear his work before you recognize Steven Tyler's voice in the chorus. And his chemistry with Steven Tyler on stage and in the sounds they created is very iconic. They were called the Toxic Twins. So you've got Steven Tyler screaming paired with this heavy, like rooted guitar lines. He's got some like signature slide work on songs like Ragdoll. And that like slide is not something that like just everybody does. So that's unique to him. And so he's like heavy use of wah and distortion, which gave Aerosmith this edge, which he and Slash are similar to me in that they do have very blues influenced sounds, but I feel like Slash's solos are like more singable, more melodic, a little prettier, I guess, if you want to say, in tone. But Joe Perry can do it all: hard rock, power ballads, blues, pop rock. His guitar work is a core identity marker of the band. And so he brought also that same role to Hollywood Vampires, which I don't know if I would call that necessarily a super group either, but they do call themselves that. So you've got Alice Cooper, Joe Perry, and then Johnny Depp, who's just kind of lucky to be there, I think. I love Johnny Depp, but he doesn't shine musically, I don't think. but like Flea, he's very appealing and entertaining in live shows. He's got that cool swag to him, like Steven Tyler's just like going nuts, and then you've got Joe Perry's just this very grounded figure that's just cool. But like Flea's very entertaining, but like not in the attractive way that Joe Perry is appealing. they're similar but different. So I love Joe Perry, I love Aerosmith, I will be their champion all the time on this podcast. So,
all right. Okay, so my second pick, I actually enjoy this musician more than the frontman. And this person was the first one that I thought of when you said wingman. Richie Sambora, 150 million albums sold worldwide with Bon Jovi. He and John were the primary songwriters. And I think that his skill and his guitar skill and his vocals especially were critical to their success. So his harmonies gave them a distinctive sound, much like... I don't want to mention them yet because I don't want to, in case somebody else mentions them, I don't want to step on it. But their harmony structure is those tight, him taking that higher harmony just, I mean, and even though I don't enjoy John Bond that much as a performer. Mm. Like, I love listening. Listen, my friend Jennifer, she is and has always been a John Bon Jovi fan. And every time they have come anywhere within a 2-state radius, we've all got it. We got to go load up and we got to see him. So, and all he does now is stand there and make jazz hands. That's all he does. I mean, it's
so weird.
It's a lot. It's the same show every time. And he went through some vocal issues. Now, in their early stuff, the dude was amazing. His vocals were so good. But I think that Richie's harmonies over the top put the icing on that cake. And he definitely saw himself, and has said so in interviews, he saw himself as the Keith to John's Mick. And he had what he felt was a place of importance in that band, and he did. I mean, but in 2013, on the first leg of their tour, he just did not show up to get on the plane to go to a gig in Calgary. And until like 2018, John Bon Jovi did not speak to him. Like they called in, who was it? Phil X? To play that show. They went ahead and played the show, and he just kept playing with them. And Richie cites, he had personal issues. He was, he had become divorced from Heather Locklear, and they had a child, and he felt like he needed to spend more time with her. He says that he does not regret leaving. He regrets how he did it. But there was definitely a change, a shift in their sound without his writing and his support vocals and his guitar playing. And in my opinion, not for the better. So I'm just going to put that out there. But I did get to see him once. I got to see them once. But every other subsequent time I've seen Jon Bon Jovi, it's been without Richie, and it's disappointing. It's just not, it's not the same. And I think Dead or Alive is just, that is the pinnacle, I think, of their songwriting and singing partnership. I just thought he was amazing. Even though it was ugly, it was an ugly ending, and they still haven't really come back together. They did come back together when they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They played together. Also, since then, he has been on The Masked Singer as the Jacket Potato.
Jacket Potato?
I don't even know what a Jacket Potato is, but that was his character that he played.
I need to see a visual of this. Yeah. Keep talking.
Yeah. So, when I think of wingmen, that was the first musician to come to my mind, because I don't, as good as Jon Bon Jovi was, and as you know, I enjoyed the band as a whole, especially in the late 80s. It's not the same without Richie. Did you find a picture?
It's a potato with a jacket on it. I mean, he like has a whole outfit. It looks like aluminum foil. And he's wearing a shirt that has beans.
It's interesting. Like, I wonder if I would have recognized his voice.
His shoes are takeout containers.
Oh.
That's funny. The outfits on that show are interesting.
Yeah, they are.
So an English jacket potato just means that it has a crispy skin, crackly skin, and fluffy flesh.
Okay. So a baked potato.
Essentially, okay. Yes.
Got it. All right. So I get my last pick, right?
Yeah.
All right. My last pick, obviously Ben knew because he was, you know, doing the draft. But it is not a wingman. It is a wing woman.
I bet I know it.
I bet you do. It's Nancy Wilson. In addition to their sound, to their vocal sound and their musical sound, she's also a great songwriter. She and Anne collaborate, and they're both critical to that heart sound. And they have, you know, we've talked a couple times about blood harmony.
Yep.
And it's a thing. And when you share DNA with somebody, there's just going to be a meshing and a resonance together that you're not going to get with other people. Siblings just sound different than singing with other people. I think she's consistently underrated as a guitarist. I think in guitar circles, I think she is respected, but I think just mainstream, I think people forget about her sometimes. She was always, you know, very beautiful, and she always wore the skirts and doing the high kicks and had the big hair. And I think that people underestimated her because of her look. But that, the beginning of Crazy on You.
Yeah. Ooh.
I'm sorry.
What?
Yeah. So, I mean, she's setting that stage before Anne even starts singing, you know. Her vocals are very solid. They're not big and round and powerful like Anne's, but she always puts that upper layer. And Anne's singing up in the stratosphere a lot of the times anyway, and then she's up over the top of her. Yeah. And she did sing lead on their first number one single of all this voice. And I think Anne Wilson has, as I've said, the best female voice in rock and roll history. And Nancy was the one that was singing on the first number one single of These Dreams. But I still would say she's a wingman because I can see Anne with a solo career. I think it would be harder for her to do what she... I think it would be harder for her to stand out on her own. I think that she is a definite number two, you know, as far as recognition in that band. And she does offer a support role. A lot of times she doesn't even play lead guitar on some of their stuff, but she does provide a support like nobody else can provide on their music. And, you know, I mean, they've stuck it out for, they've been together probably 50 years. They've been doing, yeah. Yeah, because Barracuda had to come out around 75, you know, at the latest. So, you know, they're still touring. They're, you know, and through Anne's health problems and cancer diagnosis and everything, she's been right there. So, and I think it's good to have some girl power representation on the list. So,
yeah. It's a good pick. My last pick, I'm also shaking it up a little bit. Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
It starts with
one. I don't know why. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to explain in due time. All I know, time is a valuable thing. Watch it fly by as the pendulum swings. Watch it count down to the end of the day. The clock takes life away. It's so unreal. Didn't look out below. Watch the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on to didn't even know. Or wasted it all just to watch you go. I kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to be will eventually be time. I tried so hard and got so far, but in the end, it doesn't even matter. I had to fall to lose it all, but in the end, it doesn't even matter.
One thing. All right, so now I can tell. Sean was like, no. So that's not really a...
R.I.P. Chester.
Yes, R.I.P. Chester. That clip, I guess if you don't know a lot of Linkin Park, you might think, well, he's the lead singer. But that song is not characteristic of the dynamic of most of their releases. So when people think about Linkin Park, they're going to first think Chester Bennington. They think that voice, that the singing that he does. But Mike Shinoda is a co-founder, producer. He does those rap
parts in there, instrumentalist, visual designer. So Linkin Park blends rap, rock, electronic rock into this distinct sound. And they have this dual vocal in a number of their songs. Usually it's a little bit more like Mike Shinoda stuff is like more of a sprinkle, usually, where Chester will sing and scream and he'll come in with the raps. And like if you listen to a song like Bleed It Out, Numb, you know, that's a little bit more representative of the ratio of Chester to Mike. But he was their primary producer and composer. He also played guitar, keys, piano. His fingerprints are more on that music than anybody in the band. But Chester gets the glory, which is kind of like, you know, what you said, like that's a wingman, you know, like Mike is laying down, putting the work in visually, musically, all that stuff. And then you work together with this guy to say, all right, go fly, you know, like be the face and the voice of this band. So he's responsible for most of the band's art direction. And if you've ever seen any of their videos or stage work or even their album artwork and stuff, it's different. And they have their own kind of striking visual. So he's the art direction, the album artwork. He designed their live visuals and their stage setups. He studied illustration and graphic design. And he was named one of Rolling Stone's most influential people in rock. He's really the architect of Linkin Park and one of the most innovative and successful bands of the 21st century. And it's because of his influence on the sound and their style and their visual. Linkin Park has sold over 100 million albums. They're still touring. And here's the thing about it is that they've replaced Chester. I don't think it's the same, right? Emily, I can't remember her name, her last name, but she's good, but you know, you have that voice of that you're just not going to replicate that. But they're still doing it. But if you lost Mike, I don't think you could really do the same. They've won 2 Grammys and they're one of the most streamed rock bands of all time. I love Linkin Park. They're kind of a newer band than a lot of these that we'll probably mention today, have mentioned so far for sure. But don't sleep on Linkin Park. And there's a video of this girl. He's on a red carpet somewhere and this girl is interviewing him and this is a music event. And it's kind of a testament to how like much he puts on the band, but how much of the second he is in Linkin Park, because this girl did not even recognize him by face. Really, the people she was talking to remotely, like in the studio, she was like, "Oh, what are you doing here? Blah, blah, blah." Like she's acting like she has no idea who this man is. And the people on the thing were like, "That's the other guy in Linkin Park." She was like, she immediately like dropped to her knees and was like, "I'm sorry." So it's like, I mean, you recognize, I mean, how embarrassing for you, but like, he's obviously, when she sees, okay, this is who this is, I know the impact he has on this band, this massive band who has had an impact on recent rock music. So, yeah.
All right. Last pick. One. In the NFL draft, they call this person Mr. Irrelevant, the last pick of the draft. But what we're going to call him is the godfather of heavy metal, because it's Tony Iommi.
Gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh Lord! Georgia.
Obviously, it's Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath. He is known as the godfather of heavy metal, and we've talked about it before. Really, metal kind of came into existence because three bands kind of converged at the same time: Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, and Deep Purple. And the three guitarists all provided something very, very important for metal moving forward. And nobody provided the darkness that would come and the heaviness into metal music than Tony Iommi. That was his major influence there. And so as we look at, you know, number one, how good of a guitar player is he? Well, he's in the top 15 according to Rolling Stone all time, and that's not just rock. That's including the BB Kings and the Robert Johnsons, and it's the whole gamut of folks. He's in the top 15. That's how good he is, just individually on his own. That's not taking into account the influence that he's had. And then you look at, is he the number two? Well, Ozzy is one of the most front and center personalities in the history of rock and roll. Whether you like him, whether you don't like him, his charisma is undoubted. I mean, you can't call anything into question when it comes to Ozzy's ability to get a crowd, be unique. And Tony has always been willing to stay in the background, even when Dio was the lead singer for him. And again, Dio, very theatrical. Mm-hmm. Tony always willing to be in the background. But the one thing that I think most people, and listen, I mean, Black Sabbath was full of incredible musicians. I mean, we just heard that drum. Yep. I mean, they're incredible. Top to bottom, incredible. But I don't think there would be a lot of disagreement to say that the best musician in the bunch is Tony Iommi. Probably the best visionary in the bunch, Tony Iommi. And so not only is he, even with his, like, he is never animated. Like, we think Keith is not animated. He's a freaking cartoon character compared to Tony Iommi, right? And so you've got this very understated, like, even when they interview him, there's like no facial expression with him. None. It's just, he answers the question. It is what it is. But he is such a big part, and people know who he is because he's so dang good. You know, he is so influential. There is no Black Sabbath without Tony Iommi. You can have it, obviously, without Ozzy. How do we know this? They had Black Sabbath without Ozzy, and they were successful. They weren't as successful, but they were successful. But at no point in time do I think you could pull Iommi out of that band and Black Sabbath be considered Black Sabbath. And so you have Paranoid, which I would imagine has to be the most influential metal album in history, I would think. It has to be in the top three or four because Led Zeppelin is yes, they're foundational, but you could also say they're blues albums, right? Deep Purple really is hard rock, kind of delving into heavy metal, but Black Sabbath is heavy metal, period. Point, end of discussion. That's what they are. And so he is the stable constant in Black Sabbath from start to finish. He's the songwriting, he's the riff making, he sets the musical tone, and he does all of it in such a subdued way to allow these incredibly charismatic frontmen take all the limelight. And along the way, not only has that created Black Sabbath, but if you were to ask me who's the most influential person in metal history, my vote would go to Tony Iommi. And so to me, not only is he influential for Black Sabbath, he is the most influential, in my opinion. Now, this could be debated, I don't know. But in my opinion, the most influential musician in the history of metal becoming metal music. So that's what I would say. I think that is, looking back now, a much better pick than Angus Young. And I wish that had been my second pick. But I don't think he's Mr. Irrelevant. I think that he's the godfather of metal music. So we now have we got to talk about who we don't have on our who did not get drafted. I had Brian May on here.
I did too.
But
yeah, me too.
I don't know that he's as qualified as really as any of the ones that we drafted, quite honest. I mean, really. So I'm glad to see that. Pete Townsend is one that I've very much could have seen drafted from The Who. And here's one we didn't mention. David Lee Roth.
I told Mark the same thing. I was like, who's the... Yeah. I had that conversation with Mark actually before we came to
because Eddie's the front man, right? I mean, Eddie's the most famous member of that band, right? So that makes David Lee Roth the wingman. Heather, you got Heather. Anything to say? You're just over there drinking your Sonic.
I have nothing to say.
That's just a rib.
That's silly. But
it was my number nine on my
But list. It is kind of true because two of us, we had separate conversations.
Now, aren't we glad he didn't make our top five frontman list, because now he made our top nine wingman list.
But that would have been historic, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. I also had Brian May, and then I had Mark Tremonti.
Me too.
Wow.
Are the, everybody else was selected, or do you have anybody
else? No, I had Jimmy Page at the bottom because... Mm. Just because, I don't know, I went back and forth. I put lots of people on this list. And the person that I can't believe he wasn't mentioned, but I don't know where I would, Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains. I mean, talk about just crucial to the sound of a band. And the writing, you know, the writing is him, so...
There are some bands where it's almost like there's equal parts of the pie.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, so it's, you know, how do you take somebody and say, or there are two members, and this is really the problem with Jimmy Page, is, okay, yes, Robert Plant's the front man. Okay. But who's the wingman? Who's the clear number two?
Page.
Bonham's the greatest drummer of all time.
No, yeah, no doubt. But, I mean, he's back there, you know, just pounding it out. You know, I mean, like...
There are not many drummers that they will allow to have an entire drum solo as a track. That's how good
Yeah, Bonham no, is. I mean, Led Zeppelin has always been the one band that I can think of that is true, like, usually,
They're
you know...
They're all legends.
Like, a band is greater than the sum of its parts. But I don't even know if that's true, because every single member just kind of supersedes everybody in there.
Yeah.
You could make a case that every member of that band is the gold standard mm-hmm. for their role.
They're all 1A.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, so. I don't know. That was my problem with Jimmy Page.
Yeah, he's down at the bottom.
You know? And so then, you know, like my favorite band, the Eagles, who's the front man?
Right.
We don't even know who the front man is.
Right. Right.
And then it gets really complicated when you get to Hotel California era mm-hmm. because now you've added Joe Walsh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's probably the number three behind Fry and
But you, I really couldn't tell you between, I don't, it would be very hard for me to determine if I had to, if you had to say between Fry and Henley,
yeah,
who is the front man? I don't think I could.
I don't. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. That's what I'm saying. There's not, I don't think there is one. I think there, and I think they would probably agree that we don't have a front man per se, you know? So anyway, so that's all of them, but we do have nine. Okay. Who are the nine?
Ben drafted Keith Richards, Angus Young, and Tony Iommi. Heather drafted Slash, Richie Sambora, and Nancy Wilson. And I drafted Flea, Joe Perry, and Mike Shinoda.
Okay. So we have nine. Now we have to cut it from 9 to 5.
Working 9 to 5.
All right. We ready to keep rolling? Ready to roll? Ready to roll. All right. Let's see. Let's talk first. Let's talk about Angus Young. Are we going to cut him?
I would cut him.
I would cut him.
I think he's the front man.
Yeah.
Well, maybe. He doesn't sing.
He was the consistency between the
but
two
But I think
eras.
He's the most famous person in that band. I don't think that there's any question about that. So we'll go ahead and remove him. Okay. Is there anybody we feel consistently that we can move over? I would say Slash, but I had him number 7.
I had him number 1.
But you also had him number 1. You had him number 1. So he's going to go over.
Yeah.
The second pick was Flea. I actually had Flea number 2.
I did not have
Flea. You didn't have Flea at all.
Mm-mm.
All right. I had Keith Richards number 1.
4. 9.
Okay. The next pick was Angus Young. We've already removed him. Joe Perry. I had Joe Perry number 8.
9.
Interesting. All right, the next pick was Sambora. I did not have Richie in my list.
I had him at 5.
Ooh, 2.
2 top 5s. He's a contender to be moved over, despite my objections. Nancy Wilson. I did not have Nancy Wilson.
I had her at 8.
3.
Mike Shinoda. Did not have Shinoda.
Didn't have.
And then Iommi. I feel like I'm going to be the only one that had Iommi.
So out of those, we had 2 that were in top 5s, Richie Sambora and Joe Perry. No, sorry, Flea. Richie Sambora and Flea.
Oh, man. That makes it very difficult. That leaves 1 spot for my boy Keith to get in.
No, that leaves 2 spots. Because we have Slash.
Oh, we've only got the 1.
Yeah, and then...
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm definitely all in on Flea because he was my number 2.
Well, me too. So that's that. And I like Richie Sambora. I had him at 5, but
well, y'all, there's 2 top 5s. If y'all want him in, y'all are going to get him in. So we got 2
spots left.
Keith has to go in.
Well, then how come he's not in your top 5?
He is in my top 5.
Oh, he is in your. Oh, he's in 2
oh,
top 5.
Oh, he
five.
Was. Sorry, sorry,
I thought
sorry.
You said he was like number 4. 9 or something. Oh, okay.
Oh, that's my bad. Okay, well there it is.
Okay.
Okay, so we got 1
we
spot.
We got 1 spot left.
Ooh. Who's left?
Tony Iommi, Nancy Wilson, Joe Perry, Mike Shinoda. I mean, obviously you're going to say Nancy Wilson.
Obviously. Yeah.
And I'm going to say Tony Iommi.
And then I would say Joe Perry of the 2, but Oh. We could math it. Where did you have Joe Perry?
Well, the problem is Nancy Wilson's going to be on 2 lists.
So is
Joe you had Perry.
Him. Yeah. Oh, so we could Perry. Do where the numbers are.
I had Perry 8.
Oh, wait. You had him on your list too, right?
9.
That's on 3 lists.
I think I still want to make the case for Nancy. 1, because I think having a woman on the list is kind
whoa,
of badass.
Trump ended DEI.
Well,
oh my gosh.
Do you want that's me? Do you want with. Me to give you my thoughts on anyhow? I would like, and I would also like to point out that while I love Joe Perry and I think he's fantastic, I think that Nancy's not just her guitar contributions, her vocal contributions are stellar. And songwriter. Now, I know that Joe Perry's also a songwriter, but I still think that Nancy edges him out as far as...
I think, you know, I love a B.A.
girl power moment. But this is Joe Perry. Like, this is like, you're looking at, Nancy and Ann are sisters. So there's automatically, so you would imagine there's chemistry there, right? Like, that's just sometimes a given. We talked about the role of a wingman being somebody who's instrumental to the band, the sound of the band. Visually, you're going to think of that person. And Ben, to your point, was the chemistry between them and the lead singer. And when you have somebody that the duo has a nickname, Joe Perry and Steven Tyler, I mean, come on now.
Okay, so since we're going to go into all of this, let me say this. Not only is Tony Iommi instrumental for Black Sabbath, he is instrumental for all of metal
music.
Yeah,
but we're not talking about his contributions to all of metal.
I would say that not only is Tony Iommi the wingman for Black Sabbath, he's the wingman of metal music.
No. Absolutely not.
So,
doesn't sing.
That's good entertainment.
Yeah,
that was a moment. That was a sound.
Does he have a nickname? He's the godfather of heavy metal.
Okay, we're not talking on his about. Own. Yeah,
come on now.
We are talking about him because I'm keeping him in the conversation.
Oh my god! Yeah, I hear that you are doing that.
Anyway, so we basically got it down right to Perry and
Nancy Wilson is so little of a wingman. Well, actually, she's got the same problem that Angus Young has.
No, she doesn't. No, mm-hmm. no. She is not. She cannot carry. No.
The song that you chose, think of that video. Who gets more airtime on that video?
They get equal airtime on that video. Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they do.
I'm telling you right now, I bet if we went and we timed it.
No.
I bet they put Nancy on there.
No, they get equal
more.
Time. They just show Anne from the face up because they were fat shaming her.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Anyway.
Also, Joe Perry was on all of our lists.
Well, if the vote comes to me, if we're eliminating Tony Iommi, and it comes down to Nancy Wilson or Joe Perry was on my list and Nancy Wilson was not.
Okay.
That's five. Woo-woo! All right. Our top five, / Flea, Richie Sambora, Keith Richards, and Joe Perry. Let's rank them.
Keith Richards, one.
No. No. Beth and I both had / number one.
Yeah, and I had him number 7.
Right.
We're going to let a top hat influence this whole debate.
It's not a top hat.
It's a top hat and a cigarette.
I could go for Keith number 2. Just for longevity.
Just because he stayed alive longer than everybody else in the world.
He's going to stay alive longer than us.
Yeah, that's probably true. And Cher. And you cannot deny the guy's influence.
That's not the topic, but I'll let you have it. Okay, I'm not going to argue it. The three.
Well, how good do you have to be to get any attention away from Mick Jagger?
That's true. That's true.
All right, we have Flea, Richie Sambora, and Joe Perry. Obviously,
Flea was my number 2, so that would be my vote
as well. Well, there's that. All right, so now here's the...
Who saw that one coming?
Me,
honestly. I mean, I didn't think anybody else would have Flea on their list.
Mm-hmm. See? Because I'm a bass.
I would put Richie over Joe, but...
I wouldn't. I didn't, obviously. So, Ben, that's you.
Here's where I am with it. I am a... much bigger Aerosmith fan than I am a Bon Jovi fan. However, I will say the argument made for Richie Sambora that I feel like Perry's better at the guitar. Sambora's better with the vocals. Is that fair?
No. But anyway.
You don't think that's fair?
I think Richie's a better guitar player than Joe Perry.
Well.
But at any rate.
I'm going to flip and go Sambora.
All right.
So we have five.
We and
have
a top we ranked five. Them. Yeah. Okay. Our final ranking of best rock wingmen. Number one, Slash. Two, Keith Richards. Three, Flea. Four, Richie Sambora. Five, Joe Perry. And I just want to do something fun real quick. Real quick. So our final ranking of our front men and our wingmen, mm-hmm. I want to do like a 1-1, 2-2, and see what those matchups would be like. So we had Robert Plant and Slash. You can see that. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Freddie Mercury and Keith Richards.
That does not.
This would be a competition. Mick Jagger and Flea.
Woo! High energy.
Steven Tyler and Richie Sambora. Could be good.
And Bruce Dickinson and Joe Perry. Interesting.
Those could be some fun pairings.
I could.
A lot of them can't happen anymore.
I'll tell you what we need to do one time is we need to take we could take the top twos. You know, like let's say it was Paige. We could do Plant and Paige versus Jagger and Richards kind of a thing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know. We might want to do that tournament style.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. That'd be a different kind of content. So hey, we want to thank everybody for listening to the Music List podcast. Again, you can find us on social media, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube. That may be it. But hey, if you Google us, you will find us. Find us on your favorite podcast listening platform. Leave reviews, please. They help us out a lot, and we will thank you heavily. We will be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. We'll see you then.
Thanks for joining us on the Music List podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. She almost had it.